So, continuing commentary on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, you may be questioned why we're having class on Vishnu Sahasranama instead of on Srimad Bhagavatam. But we'll find in this discussion that there's only discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam, all the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam point to the glories of Lord Vishnu, which is the subject matter of Vishnu Sahasranam. In Vishnu Sahasranam, by various names, glorifies the qualities, form, activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as does Srimad Bhagavatam. So the next name, in the second verse, Putatma Paramatma. So Putatma, has already been discussed. The next word is Paramatma, which is very simple to understand, means the Supreme Soul. So this is the main point of Vishnu Sahasranama that is to be understood by the conditioned souls especially. We'll find several names like this. We already have the name Prabhu, which means the Lord or Master. And this is the main point. He is the Supreme Being. So this very name refutes, just by this name, it refutes the Mayavad. It refutes Mayavad. Mayavadis, they want to establish that there is oneness and that all living beings are ultimately the same, and they're all manifestations, according to Mayavad, they're all manifestations of one absolute. And the various Atmas are manifested by Maya. But then, the very term Paramatma distinguishes Paramatma, the Supreme Being, from all other living beings. There's no need for the term Paramatma. If they say all are supreme, which is in itself not possible, because supreme means one only, not all. There's more than one of the same status, then it's not supreme. Supreme means yasmat param na param asti kinchit. Means that he is superior to all, and he is not, which is another way of saying the same thing, he's not inferior to anyone. No one's superior to him. So the very word Paramatma just completely blasts the Mayavad understanding to pieces. I wonder how the Shankaracharya's commented on this Vishnu Sahasranam. How can they understand it? It's a very specious way of thinking. Specious means it might sound correct, but actually it's completely bogus. That's what specious means. Have some good words in English. Seems like it's true, but it's not. So the Mayavadis interpret that, they say, soham, I am, he, I, literally, he, I, or that I. But it doesn't work. And the whole of Vishnu Sahasranam is describing the qualities, activities, energies of the Supreme Lord by which He is Supreme. That distinguishes Him from us. So if at the end of it you go through all the thousand names and say, well, actually I'm talking about myself, it doesn't make any sense. We are not the master of anything, actually. Superficially we may appear to be so. So, this point to be understood. Paramatma. Not merely, this is another important point, that the Bhagavatam starts off with discussing the param vastu, or the supreme entity, or substance, or phenomenon. But that supreme vedyam vastavam atra vastu, this vastu, this phenomenon, is to be known in all the Vedas. But that param vastu is not simply some nebulous, undefined, undefinable entity, but is param atma, is the supreme living being. This point is to be understood. Now, He is Atma. We are Atma. He is Atma. So we are of this. He is one of us in one sense. But at the same time, He's Atma, means He's a person. He has feelings, preferences, form, friends, and so on, as we do. But that He is Paramatma means that He is superior to others in all respects. This should be understood. In all respects, He is superior. He's not, it's not like something like the leader of a pack of dogs who's just a little bit, one dog is a little bit bigger, a little stronger than the other, so he becomes the leader of the pack of dogs. But that's, what is that? Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu, that name's already given. In all three phases of time, He is the master, and in all respects, He is categorically superior to all others, and with the difference is vast. The difference in His, in who He is and who we are, the difference is vast. But at the same time, we are the same in as much as we are all Atmas. So that line I quoted from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which Srila Prabhupada quotes in his verse, Matav parat, in the Gita verse, in his commentary on that, Matav parataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. Mai sarvidang protam sutre manigana eva. It's the same. The Gita is the summation of all the Upanishads. And this Matav parataram nanyat is a shorter way of kinchid asti, is another way of saying that. Yasmat param naparam asti kinchit, which is from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. So, this is established there in Gita. Yeah, in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, is in most of, the, or in all the, what are called the principal Upanishads, doesn't clearly identify, or doesn't name, the person who is superior to all, but indicates him in various ways. Tamishvaranam paramam maheshram, also from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. But who is that tam? Who is that saha? Who is that person? Krishna, he states in Bhagavad Gita the same thing. Matav paratarana nat kintid asti dhananjay. No one and no thing is equal to or is superior to me, Krishna says. So in this way, the thread of all the Upanishads, mai sarvamidam pravatam sutre manigana eva, like pearls are strung on a thread. You don't see the thread. If you see a string of pearls around someone's neck, you don't see the thread, but you understand there must be a thread there, because if there wasn't a thread there, then everything would, the pearls wouldn't hang around the neck. So it's easy. So in the same way, we may not see Krishna, but we understand he's there because he maintains everything. And similarly in the Upanishads, we may not see Krishna, but he is the hidden. The pearls of the Upanishads, they're strung on. What is the thread that holds them all together? That it's, they're all leading to Krishna, as the Upanishads themselves say. Amananti, what is that? Amananti. Sarve Veda Tatpadam Amananti. Which means the same thing. Again, all the Vedas speak of, they all declare this. And what is that? Vaidaischa Sarveraha Vedyaha. Krishna is the object of knowledge in the Vedas. So, Krishna, the Paramatma, Vishnu, Paramatma, he's superior to all. All others are either his shaktis or controlled by his shaktis. But they are his shaktis, his energies. He is the controller of all the jivas and all the shaktis. He enters into everything. As Paramatma, he enters into everything, but nothing enters into him. Mayata tamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurti. Jagadavyaktamurti. Matstani sarva bhutani. All living beings are within me. Nacha hang te svavastitaha. But they are not in me. So in this way, he's superior. He's in a category, he's a different category. He's Atma, but of a different category. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo viditati kaman. He is that, among all the living beings, he is that one who maintains all the others. He is independent and all others are dependent. This is an important point to understand. He is independent. Only he is independent and all others are dependent. So that he is Atma, this point, getting back to this, means that he's not just simply some vague indefinable that we our aim is to merge into that, but as a living being, even though he's so much superior to us, we can also relate with him. He eats, although he doesn't need to eat. So we can, it's a pleasure for him to eat. So we can offer him food. He doesn't need to eat, but it's a pleasure for him to eat when the food is offered to him with love. So we can do that and establish our relationship with him. Patrang pushpang palang toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadahang bhakti upaharitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. So, not simply some vagueness to be merged into, but the Supreme Person who we have an intimate relationship with. Every living being has an intimate relationship with him. And that is another point by which he is Paramatma, the Supreme Being, is that he can have an intimate relationship with every living being, whereas the number of relationships an ordinary jiva can have is very few. as I'm experiencing myself with the increasing number of my disciples. That personal interaction, you can only personally interact with so many. You can't personally interact with, I don't have thousands of disciples, but with thousands and thousands of people. Krishna can and does, as being within everyone's heart and outside also. He can, he expands, but he's always present in many, many forms. And you can have your own Krishna. How about that? Your own God. You can put him in a box and take him with you wherever you like. And he's yours. He's controller of everything, and put him in a box, take off somewhere else, take him out, ring the bell, offer something to him, and then put him back in a box. But if you think he's just a toy in a box, then why would you take him around anyway? So he's always supreme, even when it appears that he's not supreme. He is by nature independent, but he says, Aham bhakta paradhinam nahi aswatantra eva dvijaha. He says, you came to me, you think I'm God, right? I'm independent and I can do whatever I like, and I can remove you from this danger. But actually I'm not. You got it wrong. They taught you wrong in the Bhagavatam class. I'm not independent. I'm dependent on my devotees. I'm controlled by them.
Yeah, but it says here right in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's Swarat, you're independent. No, forget all that. That's just...
So anyway, he's independent. That's what we're discussing here. Later on we'll discuss how he's... But that's another feature of him being Paramatma, being the Supreme, is that he is the Supreme Being and he can do whatever he likes. He can independently choose to become dependent on his devotees. That's an arguable point. Does he independently choose? Maybe. But bhakti is stronger than him. So there is someone superior to him. Anyway, we're not discussing this in Vishnu side. Then we have to go on to Gauriya Tattva to understand all these things. And actually, yeah, Gauriya understanding of Paramatma in Gauriya Siddhanta, this understanding of Paramatma is in a manner, apart from the term the Supreme Being, Paramatma also refers to the aspect of the Supreme Truth who is understood as the Supreme Lord who enters into everything, into every atom and into everything. This Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabhyate. That one indivisible Supreme is perceived in three ways: as impersonal Brahman, localized Supersoul, Paramatma, and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this also follows the Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna speaks of Paramatma in the 13th chapter. Krishna describes the Supreme Lord present in everyone's heart, and in that as Upadrashtanu Mantacha Bhukta Bharta Maheshwara. What is that? Upadrashtanu Mantacha Bhukta. No, I put it around the wrong way. Bharata Bhokta Maheshwara. Paramatmeti Chapyukto Dehe Smin Purusha Paraha. There's so much in this one verse. Again, all Upanishadic understanding. The two birds in the one tree, the supreme Purusha within the body, who witnesses everything, and who, this verse again, it's a recasting of the, what is that, Dve Suparna, the two birds in the, two birds in the tree, and it comes up in several Upanishads, this analogy of the two birds in the tree. One is observing, and while the other is eating the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree. So this very word is given, Paramatma, that this the indweller, the antaryami means indweller, is also Paramatma. In Bhagavad Gita also, Jitatmana Prashantasya Paramatma Samahita, that one who has conquered himself reaches, one who's conquered himself and who has become fully peaceful, then he has reached to the Paramatma. So the Mayavadi understanding is that you become the Paramatma, but it's a wrong understanding. Yes. So I met Gokul Chandra, didn't mean I became Gokul Chandra. It's a bit of a stretched understanding that. Then I met someone and then I just merged into him. A bit strange understanding now. Uttama Purushastvanya Paramatmetyudaharitaha Yoloka Trayama Vishabhi Bhatavya Ishvaraha. The Upadrashtanu Mantacha, the indweller within the heart, that refers to the Paramatma, the super soul within everyone, within every jiva. And then in the 15th chapter, it is discussing the kshara and akshara, the fallible and infallible, two classes of living beings. And then transcendental to both of them is the Supreme Lord, Yoloka Trayamavisha, who enters into all the planets. So this is the super soul of the universe, can be understood. The Purusha avatars, the Maha, the Karadakshay Vishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Kshiradakshay Vishnu. So they're the different forms of the Paramatma who enter into all. There's also a quote, if I can find that, from given here from the Vishnu Purana. Oh, where's that? Which identifies, Paramatma is Vishnu, because some people they want to say, well, Paramatma means Shiva, but Paramatma cha sarvesham adhara parameshvaraha Vishnur nama sarva vedeshu vedanteshu cha giyate. So who is the supreme among all living beings, who is the supreme, who is the support, the basis, the supreme controller, is known in all the Vedas by the name of Vishnu, and is similarly praised in the Vedanta. So that's a quote from Vishnu Purana that establishes that Paramatma is Vishnu. And of course, because this is Vishnu Sahasranama, that also establishes him as the Supreme. So this is the important point as we go through Vishnu Sahasranama, to understand that this is a description of the names, not simply of a great person, but of the greatest, who is eternally the greatest in all respects. And of course, the Gaudiya understanding will always lean toward not seeing that he's supreme simply in terms of, well, what are those, of opulence. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriyaha jnana vairagya yos chaiva shandang bhaga itingana. The opulence by which Bhagawan is known as Bhagawan, who the complete wealth, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, or non-attachment. These are the qualities by which Bhagawan is known as Bhagawan. But the Gauriyas will especially look to Krishna, Sabhagawan Swayam Krishna, that Bhagawan is Krishna, for as supreme among all the Atmas in love and sweetness. So these are the qualities of Bhagawan which the Gauriyas emphasize. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasizes the greatness of Krishna is established repeatedly in terms of his opulence in Srimad Bhagavatam, and over and above that, his beauty is among all the six qualities given there. Among them, the Gauriyas, they emphasize his beauty, and moreover his sweetness of personality and his love. Yeah. So the next name in Vishnu Sahasranama is Muktanam Parama Gatihi, which is again slap in the face for Mayavadis who want to think that the param gati, or the ultimate goal to be achieved in mukti, is devoid of qualities. But the whole Vishnu Sahasranam is simply describing the qualities of the Supreme, and he's this supreme goal of for the liberated souls. So how can they say that the supreme goal is without qualities, when the whole Vishnu Sahasranam is in various ways describing his qualities? So who are liberated? Liberated persons means they're liberated from kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, from all these perversities. Oh, that's another way in which Krishna, I mean, there are unlimited ways in which Krishna is supreme. He is, yeah, he's there's no question of him ever falling down. He's achuta. He never comes under the jurisdiction of the of his external energy. Being the controller of all his energies, he never comes under their jurisdiction. But then again, he does, of his yoga maya shakti, for the sake of enjoyment, which goes to show that enjoyment is supreme. Work is not supreme. Enjoyment is supreme. Don't work, just play. That's what Krishna says. He's the original hippie. Forget all this work, just play, just enjoy yourself. Come on, let's play a flute and dance with the girls. And of course, he looks after the cows too. He's not negligent of the cows, but he likes to dress up in nice clothes and flowers, yeah, bells. So what's all this work? Let Vishnu do that. Krishna's just enjoying himself. So the muktas, those who are released from the bondage of Maya according to the Vaishnava definition. That means in the Sri Vaishnava and Madhva schools, these two prominent philosophical schools. The Muktas are those who are free from the bondage of Maya and they enjoy bliss along with Bhagavan in the spiritual world. They enjoy the bliss of the spiritual world they enjoy with him. They have equality of enjoyment. They have no material desires or wants. They, being free from material perversities, lust, greed, anger, illusion, envy, madness, they're also the liberated souls. They're also free from hunger, thirst, lamentation, fear, greed, and all these troubles of material existence. So they have no troubles, but their goal is to serve Krishna. Paramagati is the goal after attaining which you don't desire anything else. In the material world, if you attain something, then you want to go on to something else. You're never satisfied. You always want to go, always strive for more, go higher, find a higher, more difficult mountain to climb. And when you climb, when you found the most difficult mountain and you climbed it, then you handicap yourself. Strap one hand behind your back and try climbing it again. Always try for something more. But that upon reaching which one will be fully satisfied, and there is no further place to go anyway, unless you're a damn Mayavadi and they want to become God themselves. But that's impossible. So he is the supreme goal for all the liberated persons. Now, the Gaudiya attitude or understanding of mukti is different in some ways to that of the other Vaishnava Sampradayas, because like the Mayavadis, their goal is liberation from material existence. Of course, the Vaishnavas, they define mukti in a very different way. The Mayavadi's idea of mukti is to merge into the oneness. Whereas the goal of the Vaishnavas, that is to serve the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha. And this is their understanding of the name Muktanam Paramagatihi, the ultimate goal of the liberated persons. However, Gauriyas, they not much concerned with liberation, but their understanding is that bhakti is so much superior that moksha laghutakrit. They think that one of the qualities of bhakti, as defined by Rupa Goswami, is it makes this moksha, which is such a big thing. You know, go through all the Vedas and all these rituals and going up and down, gata gatam kama kama labhante. You go up and down, up and down, up and down to heaven. Many times. Sometimes you pop down into hell, come back up again, do some yagas up to heaven. You get fed up with it. Then you decide you want to get liberated from the material world, and bahunamja, you go life after life after life, doing all these austerities, and then you might finally get moksha, and the Vaishnavas say it's just a... what's it? Moksha? What's that? They're not interested anyway. It's just something insignificant, that's all. If we think moksha is such a big thing, then what's the big thing about Krishna? So love of Krishna makes the desire for moksha seem very insignificant. So Vaishnavas don't even talk about how they get mukti and all that. They find that bhakti is so much superior that they consider it better to be in this material world and serving Krishna than to be liberated without that service. And that's stated in the by Lord Kapila Dev. What is it? Sarupya Sarshti Samitya Samipya Salokya. Okay, Kevalam, that word I forget. But then the next line is the important part anyway. Diyamana Magrinanti Vinamat Sevanam Janaha. He says that these different kinds of muktis, residing on the same planet as me, Kapila Dev, Vishnu speaking, Saloka, residing in my personal presence, Samipya, Sarshti, achieving the same opulence as myself, Salokya, Samipya, Sarshti, having the same form as myself, or this kind of impersonal liberation, these five kinds of liberation. Kapila Dev says that my devotees, even if they get the opportunity to have these, but they without bhakti to myself, then they don't accept. They won't accept mukti without the opportunity to serve Krishna. So there are many such statements in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is why one of the many reasons that Srimad Bhagavatam is accepted as the topmost evidence of all the Vedic knowledge, and how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, they have mined the jewels out of Srimad Bhagavatam to understand ahaitukiya pratihata. Bhakti is without any trace of any personal desire, and not, which means also it doesn't stop, and there's no circumstances in which one's bhakti, this kind of bhakti, in which that will be stopped, that one will stop to serve Krishna. So this is the bhakti that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam, va, jagadisha, kamaya, mama janmani, janmanishvare, bhavatad, bhakti, rahai, tuki, twai. So this prayer, in this prayer, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states that without causeless service to yourself, by causeless means not caused by any personal desire, I don't want, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want wealth, women, followers, anything within this material world, nor do I want liberation from this material world unless I can have this causeless to service to yourself. So this name, Muktanam Paramagati, it suggests, especially to a Gauriya, that those who are liberated without this understanding, they still have to go further. They're liberated, but they missed the point. Yena Ravindaksha Vimukta Maninas Trayasta Bhava Davi Shuddha Buddha Aruhya Kritrena Parang Padang Tatapadantya Dhanarita Yushvadangra. Even if persons are liberated, they did it. I finally merged into the void, or not quite a void, but the oneness. So even after much difficulty and austerity, rising to that point and thinking now I'm fully liberated, one still has to go further. It's not the ultimate goal. And if one thinks that is the ultimate goal and avoids serving Krishna, then you simply fall down, that's all. For lack of knowing what is the ultimate goal. So, for those who are already liberated, the he's the supreme goal. But for Gauriyas, again, they don't. It's like a wrong terminology or putting the emphasis in the wrong place. That because by bhakti, one is automatically liberated from this material world. And if one actually has bhakti, then why should you be so concerned about liberation from this world anyway? What does it matter whether you're in the world or not? And if you're so much concerned with getting liberated from the material world, again, it becomes a personal desire which obstructs bhakti. So that's a Gauriya perspective on this. Why the muktas? Here's the Sri Vaishnav analysis of why the muktas choose Sri Mahavishnu as their supreme goal. Number one, he does not send them back to the cycle of samsara once they reach him. Number two, he gives the enjoyment of his bliss to the muktas in abundance. Let's rephrase that to put it in better English. He gives abundant enjoyment of his bliss to the muktas. He witnesses the muktas' enjoyment of him and is in turn pleased, which pleases the muktas. So, that's nice. That he, the Supreme Lord, observes that the liberated devotees are happy being with him. He becomes pleased by that, and then they become pleased by his happiness. So it goes on and on, eternally. He knows the right place for the muktas to get their eternal bliss. And he is one whose greatness never diminishes over time in spite of the constant bliss that he provides to the muktas. But for the Gauriyas, I don't think that this idea the muktas choose Mahavishnu as their supreme goal, the wording is a bit, it's not what Gauriyas would say. It's Krishna means all attractive. It's not like choose Krishna, okay, we like Krishna, we like Vishnu, but it's a matter of reviving our dormant natural attraction to Krishna. It's choosing Krishna sounds a bit like on the mental platform. It's the natural attraction of the soul is toward Krishna. Here, that the reason for the muktas given is given, number one, why they choose Mahavishnu as their supreme goal, because he does not send them back to the cycle of samsara once they reach him. But for the Gauriyas, they'd say, well, you know, it's, you send me back or not, there's no condition that, okay, well, if I... Of course, that's true. Once you go there, you don't come back. That's the eternal constitutional position. Therefore, it's best to worship Krishna. It's for in our own self-interest. But for those who are actually liberated, they become liberated by stopping to think about what is my own personal benefit and simply how we can please Krishna. And even they may not know any philosophy. But simply by thinking, how can we please Krishna? Then automatically they become liberated, because that is liberation. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there today. Any question about this? These are all straightforward points, which we've all been through, we hope. Just bringing them all together under various categories suggested by the names, these various names. Yeah. Sometimes contradictory about Lord Shiva giving mukti. Yeah, he gives mukti, and go to Varanasi, and then when you die, he'll chant in your name, Ram Ram, and in this way he'll give mukti. Like that, just like the guru gives mukti by directing one toward Vishnu. He's not. He has the power to do so, but he's given the power of attorney by Krishna. But if one worships Shiva, considering Shiva to be the supreme, then one doesn't achieve mukti by that, because it's a cardinal misunderstanding. In personal liberation, you might get, although a touch of Vishnu bhakti is required even to get that. You might get that, but then again, it's incomplete and imperfect. It's like a hoax of being liberated. It's like you think, I got liberated, and to all appearances it has, but then patanti adha. You have to fall again. You're not really liberated at all. So Lord Shiva, if you worship him for liberation, you might get it, but not actual liberation. Or it might be liberation, but it's like the liberation that a cat gives to a mouse, just running and playing for a short time, and then you get caught, pulled back again. Yeah. Because what is liberation means to be situated. Mukti hit vanyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position. And if one is not situated in one's constitutional position or service to Krishna, then you're not liberated. You might be, just like a prisoner is liberated. He's no longer in the jail, so he's liberated. Doesn't mean he's liberated from material existence. So you might be liberated from lust, greed, anger, envy, and all these things. But if you're not situated in your constitutional position, then you can't actually, in the full and complete sense, be liberated from all these perversities. And unless one becomes situated in one's constitutional position, then you have to take some position. You can't remain always indefinite. So if one doesn't come to one's constitutional position of service to Krishna, then you have to take up some other anyata rup, some other kind of form. Which again, that means that instead of thinking of mukti, the Gaudiya approach is much better. You just think of how to serve Krishna. Mukti is automatically included. It's not anything you have to think about. Tuchafal, this in Chaitanya Charitamrita is described. In personal liberation is described as an insignificant effect of which the devotees, they don't even care for it. Yeah, so many questions. There's one there, first of all. No, it's not important. It's not an essential practice for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas to chant Vishnu Sahasranam. Chanting Hare Krishna includes everything. But as I said when I began this series of lectures, which you weren't present in because I was somewhere else. Where was I when I started this series of lectures? Where did I start this? Secunderabad. That doing so is a meditation on the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Our Gauriya Vedanta Acharya Baladev Vidyabhushan gave a commentary on Vishnu Sahasranama, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he specifically praised Vishnu Sahasranama. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked Srivas Thakur one time to recite Vishnu Sahasranama to him, which means that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expected that or knew that he must have heard Srivas Thakur chanting it. And generally all Brahmins used to chant it. It was a standard daily duty for every Brahmana all over India. So it was widely known. Even today, some do so. You'll find in many temples in South India, they've retired from their government service or whatever, retired Brahmanas, the Sri Vaishnavas and Smartas, they all get together and they chant Vishnu Sahasranam every evening. It's not uncommon still here in South India. So it's not a bad thing. You won't go to hell for doing so. If you do go to hell, it won't be for this. But everything is included in this. And always after this Vishnu Sahasranama recording is there, and then always that comes, I think they put that at the beginning and at the end, this Rama Rama Rameti, Rame Rama Mano Rame, Sahasranama Tattulyas Rama Nama Varanane. That's chanted again and again and again, that the Lord Shiva, which is not from this Mahabharata, Vishnu Sahasranama, but Lord Shiva says to Varanana, beautiful faced one, which means his wife, Durga. He says to her that Rama, 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 I'm chanting this name over, I'm finding such pleasure in this name. And if you chant a thousand names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Rama. And then there's that other one which I... This Krishna, the name Krishna is three names of Rama. So chant Hare Krishna mantra, everything's there. But it's by going through these, then we'll appreciate better who is Krishna, why we're chanting his name. Just by we study Srimad Bhagavatam to better appreciate who is that Krishna whose name we are chanting. So like I said at the beginning of today's class, this is not different from Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's considering qualities of Krishna which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam in various categories from different perspectives of Krishna's qualities and personality. Yeah, anything else? There are a few hands up there.
Mahavishnu is asking the devotees of Lord Shiva, like Upper Sundar, Manikavaskar, where he said that.
Important question in Tamil Nadu. By their devotion to Lord Shiva, they attain mukti. Yeah. How to understand it? Well, I just said how to understand it. Mukti means to be situated in one's constitutional position, which is jiva surupoi Krishna nitya das. Mamai vangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. So if one conceives of Shiva as the supreme, then he's off to a bad start. It's a misunderstanding. They may develop many apparently saintly and good qualities and become detached from Maya, but it's then they miss the point. tough one for Tamils to accept this, maybe. Especially in Sri Lanka, where they're really, in the schools, they're taught that Tamil means Shaiva, Shiva Supreme. They have religious education, but we have to change the syllabus a bit. Yeah, in Tamil Nadu, it's widely believed that Shiva is supreme. And in Bengal, it's widely perceived that Kali is supreme. A popular picture there is that of Kali trampling over the spread eagle body of Lord Shiva to show the superiority, I guess, of Kali over Shiva. And a popular picture you'll find in this part of the world is that of Ram worshipping Shiva, as if by showing this picture people like to show that Shiva is constitutionally superior to Rama. So like this, there are many different ideas floating around, but everything should be understood through the Bhagavatam, Pramanam, Amalam, the spotless Pramana, or authority, authoritative evidence, yeah. I always think what I did wrong when someone says like that. I don't, anyway. It's a formality that's come up. I guess it's a nice one. Yeah, what's the question?
What we must do that we attend to chanting? What we must do?
What must you do? You can listen to Gokul Chandra Prabhu's Japa seminar. But it's a bit off the subject.
And what is more important for attentive chanting? Is more important also service?
Yeah, please ask, go or get his Japa seminar, which is, I haven't listened to it myself, but I've heard that it's devotees are appreciating that. I probably should listen to it myself. But it's off topic, if you don't mind. We're talking about the understanding of the name. Abhideya comes later. You're now on Sambandha. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Did I say that? That's an important point. Did I make that clear? Is this still recording? Yeah, that Muktanam Parama, I said that at the beginning, that this name refutes the Mayavad idea that the supreme goal is of some void, but it's a person, personal service. So again, this, all these names, they refute Mayavad. What is that? Mutanjali, Mukhatanjali, Sevate Sman. This Bilva Mangal is quoted as that, saying that since I have. He was previously an impersonalist, and then since he became a devotee, he finds that Maya is. Mukti, the goddess Mukti is standing before him with folded hands, waiting to serve him. In other words, by serving Krishna, Mukti becomes one's servant. In other words, it becomes that, you know, that one can choose to be in this world or not, practically, by becoming dear to Krishna. What is that verse? Mukhatanjali Sevate Sman. That's the key words. But it's another. Shh, Right, right, right. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's. There's the answer to your.
I want to turn north.
I see.
It's written by Gautama. It is an Alpine Goswami in Greek. He says that he empowers Shiva and Parvati. Lord Krishna empowers Shiva and Parvati to give mukti on his behalf.
Yeah, but the kind of mukti that Lord Shiva gives are of two kinds.
Yeah.
One is the real thing, which not many get, that the Vaishnav mukti, and the other one is the semblance of mukti, which isn't.
There was that discussion that Bhakti Rashik Shriva Dharmaraj and Srila Prabhupada about the Sadashiva and Shiva, and then he's preaching bhakti, then he's Sadashiva, and then he's preaching.
When he's doing his job as Bhutanath and Nataraj, and then he's connected with this material world.
So when he's Sarasya speaks, then he's devotee. And otherwise he's like a little bit of Prabhupada is like, no, both ways he's devotee. But he has his
But he's perceived differently, yeah. Hare Krishna. All right, you can all go and take prasadam, I guess.